Welcome to The Man from 2063, where the past meets the future with Jack Duffy, here on Blog Talk Radio. Whether it's conspiracy theories, politics, current events, sports, entertainment, or historical events, Jack will keep you fascinated with entertaining guests on every show. This show is no hold bars. Now your host, Jack Duffy.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another show. Tonight is going to be an unbelievably fantastic program. I know I've said this several times with other guests that I've had on, but I really mean it tonight. I've had some incredible programs the last year and a half, but I'll say truthfully, tonight I think maybe the best program of all the shows I've had so far since I started this radio program. It's a real honor to have St. John Hunt as my guest tonight. St. John Hunt, for those who are not familiar, is the oldest son of E. Howard Hunt, the famous Watergate burglar, who was also in the CIA for many, many years. His father was rumored to have been involved in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and St. John wrote a new book recently called Bond of Secrecy, My Life with CIA Spy and Watergate Conspirator E. Howard Hunt. This book, ladies and gentlemen, I've read it already from cover to cover. This book is unbelievably great. It is really, really fantastic. You really need to go buy this and read this. Every American in this country ought to read this book. It's just an unbelievable account of what probably really happened to President John F. Kennedy and what role St. John's father probably played in the plot. There's been so many books written about the Kennedy assassination. There's been over thousands of books, but this one is really one of the best I've ever read, and I've read a lot of them. So without any further delay, I want to welcome Mr. St. John Hunt. Thank you so much for being our guest tonight, St. John. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Jack. Thank you very much for having me, and thank all of your listeners for tuning in on this show tonight. You gave me a pretty severe build-up there. I hope I can meet your expectations.
Well, it's an honor to have you on because your father was one of the more important people in the country's history in the CIA, and unfortunately he's deceased now. But your book talks a lot about his involvement with Watergate and possible involvement with the Kennedy assassination. Why did you write the book? What made you want to write this book?
Well, I wrote the book firstly because I needed to get out the information that my father had given me. Firstly, in a private manner. In other words, I didn't really know how to bring it out to the public, so I just wrote it down. And then eventually, I was contacted Rolling Stone magazine, and they were generous enough to send an investigative reporter out to pick up the story, and they released the story. They were the first ones. But my father, at his deathbed, his wishes, his last instructions for me were to bring this out to the press, because even though he and I had intended for him to bring it out, at the very end of his life, he was too weak and too exhausted, too close to death to really, follow through with the many interviews and potential court proceedings, because there is no statute of limitations on having prior information and knowledge of a presidential assassination. So it's very likely that that he could have been, brought into some kind of court proceedings and accused of complicity in the murder of President Kennedy. So he knew at that point that he was going to go to his grave without coming forward himself, but he instructed me to do the best I could to bring it out. And I have to say, and I'm not happy about saying it, but that he was very proud of his service in the OSS, the CIA, and he had no regrets. In other words, he didn't feel remorse. He didn't feel regret as being involved in the Kennedy assassination. He felt at the time and to his death in 2005 that it was a thing that needed to be done, and so he stood by that, a man of conviction and a patriot in his own thinking, and that's why I brought it out, because he said bring this out, and I did.
Well, when did you first start believing or thinking that your father might have been involved in the Kennedy assassination in some way?
Well, back in the in the early 2000s, actually even prior to that, I had seen a poster on a telephone pole when I was living in California. Just randomly driving by in a neighborhood, and there was a poster on a telephone pole that big black and white letters said JFK, CIA killed JFK, and there was three photographs on the front of the poster. It was a lecture being offered by Speaker Dick Gregory, who was a comedian and then became an activist in civil rights and also in the affairs of the CIA, and him trying to expose the CIA as a corrupt entity. Back in those days, not many people were doing that. And so that was the first notification that I had. The three pictures were of two hobos and one picture of my father, which really startled me. But what startled me even more was that the two images of the hobos looked very, very close to the image they had of my dad. And I just kind of took the poster down, put it in a drawer, and didn't think much of it. But then books keep coming out, books by Mark Lane called Plausible Denial, books by A.J. Weberman and Michael Canfield called Coup d'etat in America, where they blatantly and directly accuse my father of being a major player in the operation to assassinate JFK. And so I picked up on these books, and I kind of read about it, but I didn't really know what to believe. And it was only at the end of my father's life that I realized that these people had been generating a lot of income for themselves by these blatant accusations and about my father. And it kind of bothered me, and I thought, you know, I should really try to get my dad riled up about this and get him to write his autobiography and be truthful about these. Was he involved or wasn't he? Was he one of the tramps or wasn't he? Would he even be open to my asking him these questions, which we had never talked about? But there were some little clues in the past. When he was in prison, he wrote me letters, he mentioned that that I shouldn't pay any attention to the allegations that he had been involved in the JFK assassination. And even prior to that, he had given me a heads up if I was ever questioned by any officials from the government that I should say that my father was with me on the day that Kennedy was assassinated, which at the time I knew he wasn't, because I was there, he wasn't. And so I was suspicious, but I didn't know really how much importance he played, not only in the JFK assassination, but in other areas of his clandestine service. I didn't know he was a kind of a heavy hitter. And it was only through researching and talking with him that I found out that, you know, he was instrumental in the CIA assassination squad known as Operation 40, to liquidate foreign leaders and dignitaries that didn't subscribe to the United States' point of view. And his involvement with mafia people like John Roselli, that I really started questioning myself and thinking that, wow, maybe he was involved. And so starting in 2002, I started writing my dad letters, talking to him on the phone about putting a project together, a book, that would reveal his true role in all of these operations down through the years. And really, the only way I got him to respond positively was to get him pissed off at me, to get him pissed off at the world, at these other writers, Mark Lane, A.J. Weberman, that had made money on books, accusing him of this and that, kind of dragging his name around. He was, you know, accused and alleged to be involved in all manner of things, some true and some not true. And he agreed. We had to keep it secret from his second wife, who lived with him, Laura, and his children. And they were very suspicious of why I was coming down to Miami so many times and having these kind of closed-door sessions with my father. They knew something was up, and eventually, they, along with his lawyer, they were able to put enough pressure on my dad that was the end of the project. In other words, the book that came out after his death, American Spy, was just another book like his first autobiography, Undercover, which was released in 1973. That was pulled off the shelves because there were glaring untruths, blatant lies, which had come out during his Senate investigation hearings for Watergate, about his role in Watergate. So the second book, American Spy, was not the book that I had intended he write. It was actually written mostly by a ghostwriter down in Miami.
Did your father ever admit that he was in Dallas on the day of the Kennedy assassination?
No, he never, in fact, admitted. He did admit that he was not one of the tramps, which I totally believe, because a man of my dad's stature, in other words, someone as high up in CIA as someone like my father, would not be dressed as a tramp on a boxcar in a railroad yard. He was there. There is one photograph taken in Dealey Plaza just moments after the assassination, just after the motorcade had gone under the overpass. And it shows, it's a wide shot taken from far away. It shows dozens of people walking across the street, and there's one gentleman who's dressed in a trench coat and a Stetson hat, and he looks remarkably like my father. I mean, it's the same trench coat he had, it's the same hat he wore. And if there's any photograph of my father in Dealey Plaza that day, it's not the hobo tramp photos. It is that one single photograph, and nobody's ever been able to come up with, you know, they've tried to find out who is this man, and it's a mystery. And since then, I've spoken with a pilot. His name is Tosh Plumley. Anybody can research Tosh. He was the pilot that flew my dad into Dallas that morning. And later flew him out. And my dad's verification of working at the CIA office in Langley, Virginia that day just absolutely crumbled. The witnesses that he would hope for would support his alibi of being at Langley that afternoon crumbled on the witness stand under Mark Lane's interrogation. And so he was left without having an alibi. So you put two and two together. Sometimes you come out with four, sometimes you don't. This time, it seemed to all fit together.
Did your dad ever say why they wanted to kill Kennedy or what the motive was? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yes, there was many motives. Matter of fact, everyone in the government, meaning the people in the military, the chief of staffs, include, and also the CIA, the Department of Defense, the military-industrial complex thought Kennedy was a complete and dangerous individual that had to be stopped. Kennedy was way ahead of his time. Very few people realize that when the Russians agreed to pull their missiles out of Cuba, it wasn't because President Kennedy acted in a forceful resolution in a threatening manner to the Russians. The reason they pulled the missiles out of Cuba was because Kennedy agreed to pull our missiles out of Pakistan. And that part of the whole story was not brought to the press. And so it made Kennedy look like he was a hard ass on communism, which people in the military industrial complex had been accusing Kennedy of being soft on communism. Well, this guy is going to bring us to where the communists are going to be taking over country after country in the Latin American sector. And so that was one reason that the military-industrial complex wanted to further the war in Vietnam against the communists, which at the time they had subscribed to the domino principle, which was basically you let one country fall to the communists, and even though they may say that's where they're going to stop, they're not going to stop. They're going to take the next country and the next country and the next country, and pretty soon you're going to be surrounded with communist countries, missile bases, nuclear weapons capabilities aimed at the United States, and so forth and so on. That was reason number one. Reason number two was that Kennedy withdrawal from Vietnam was going to put a lot of the huge industrial giants out of their contracts for building the helicopters, supplying munitions, and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, this was a $1 billion business to build up our war machine against Vietnam, and now Kennedy was going to destroy it all. He was going to withdraw starting in December of the year, had he lived, 1,000 troops. And then he was going to continue withdrawing troops because he knew, and as many people felt, that the Vietnam was just a losing operation, that it was never going to amount to us winning over the communists. And in the long run, many years later, under Nixon's presidency, we all it came to pass that we finally withdrew from Vietnam in a peaceful resolution, but we didn't really achieve anything. The only thing we achieved was the death of tens of thousands of Marines and soldiers, and the loss of American stature in the world. We had been basically defeated. But the people that won in that loss were the industrialists, because they were allowed to continue huge production of military weapons from 1963 to 1970. When did we get out of Vietnam? 74, 75, something like that?
1975.
Yeah. So they had a good run of, 12 years of big government contracts for their money.
Wow. Well, who was involved in the conspiracy, according to your dad? Who were the main players that killed Kennedy?
Well, as my dad outlined it in a handwritten note, the main conspirators that he knew of. Well, let me forward this by saying that in the late spring, early summer of 1963, he was notified that there was a strategy meeting at a safe house in and around Miami, his appearance was requested, so he went down. And at this meeting, and there was two or three meetings that he attended, he met with people he had known for many, many years. One was Dave Morales, a CIA, CIA contract asset. And Dave Morales is a very, very serious figure. He was the guy that the CIA would go to if they wanted someone liquidated. In other words, he was almost psychotically induced to murder, and everybody knew it. Dave Morales was the guy to go to for this. Dave Morales was there. Frank Sturgis was there, another person that my father used in Watergate later on, and Frank Sturgis had been part of the Bay of Pigs invasion. A guy named Antonio Veciana was there. He was also the founder and leader of the most violent anti-Castro Cuban group called Alpha 66. And these three gentlemen brought to my father's attention an operation, as at that time as yet undisclosed to my father, about assassinating an American person during a crowded in a crowded American city. And these people said that the chain of command, because my father wanted to know, well, who's approving this as yet unnamed operation? And they said Bill Harvey is the next person above us. And above that, or alongside of that, is David Atlee Phillips, a longtime CIA covert ops gentleman who actually was recruited into the CIA by my father. So he knew Phillips for a long time. And then above that, there was a gentleman named Cord Meyer, who my dad also knew. Cord Meyer was a very high-up CIA official whose wife had been a mistress of JFK's. And they had divorced, and Cord never really got over that fact that JFK was using his ex-wife as a mistress and also as a drug-taking companion. It was well known in the gossip areas of CIA and such that JFK and Mary Meyer, Cord's ex-wife, had been doing LSD and smoking marijuana with the President of the United States, and that she kept a diary. She was also murdered shortly after his assassination, and the diary was taken from her apartment, never to be found again. But that's a whole other story that my dad told me about. And then the top of the chain of command, my dad wrote down LBJ. Now, this was really a shock to me, but already several people had written books about LBJ being involved, but I don't think at that early stage of assassination theories that they had really been taken seriously. But now, as times have changed, more and more authors are realizing that LBJ was, in fact, you know, the main conspirator in this. Not that he worked on the plans of where the assassination was going to be or how many teams of assassins were going to be there, but just in the fact that it had his approval, and it had his support that the true assassins would never be caught, that he would ensure that the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover, who was very close friends with LBJ, would do an investigation that would show that a single lone assassin was the one to blame. And so those are the people. We have LBJ at the top. We have under him Cord Meyer and David Atlee Phillips. Bill Harvey. Bill Harvey was a very energetic and enthusiastic a member of CIA, somewhat eccentric. He was a psychotic alcoholic, as my dad described him to me. Carried around pearl-handled 45 pistols on his person at all times. And he was a brilliant agent, but really he took too many risks and was not comfortable. Bobby Kennedy had demoted Bill Harvey to be a station chief in Rome, which much to the anger of Bill Harvey, this was an intolerable situation. So Bill Harvey had a hatred of the Kennedy brothers. Cord Meyer had his reasons for disliking the Kennedys. And David Morales, Frank Sturgis, and David Atlee Phillips all had their reasons for being a part of this. These were the guys that could put a team together, including my dad, to take out the President of the United States and do it successfully. Now, there was a team organized in Tampa, which wasn't successful. There was a team organized for Chicago that was not successful. It didn't take place. And there was a team organized for Dallas, which was a last-minute change for President Kennedy's touring of the South to get votes. Lyndon Johnson was the vice presidential candidate, and his involvement in various illegal cotton exchange monies and oil depletion funds in Texas. Also, the fact that he basically had bought his way into politics, and Johnson was already being investigated for potential links to various murders that had gone on in Texas. The Kennedys' plan was to dump Johnson as soon as possible. He was being investigated for his links to a guy named Bobby Baker, and he was, Johnson was up to his neck in illegal dealings, both financial and murderous, and he was on his way out. So by putting Johnson in the position of president, he would be assured to quash any of these investigations, and he did. So that was his payoff. He knew that he could never be president as long as Kennedy was alive, because Kennedy would have been voted in for another term, and then probably Bobby for another term after that. And Johnson was old. He wasn't particularly popular. He bought most of his votes, and this was his one shot at becoming president, which was his all-consuming reason. My father said Johnson was the most dangerous and self-absorbed president that the White House had ever seen. This was a dangerous man that they had brought in. Wow. So there was a lot of reasons why they wanted Kennedy killed.
I want to ask you, the main question that everybody wants to know 50 years later is, what role did Oswald play in this? Did your dad ever divulge what Oswald's participation, if any, was in this thing?
Well, Oswald was just a poor individual whose role, like many other persons, the three plots, the three areas that they were going to kill Kennedy in, Tampa, Chicago, and Dallas, they each had a lone person with a Marine background to pin the blame on. They CIA routinely keeps these people in low levels of assignment, and Oswald for years had been what they call sheep dipped. In other words, when he was in the Marines and he was stationed in Japan, coincidentally or not, at the same time my dad was in Japan, that we lived in Japan, he was given intense language lessons in Russian. So even at that point, this is 1957, they had already been creating the Oswald myth, which was he was a true communist in heart, and then he would go to Russia, renounce the United States, and offer them military secrets in exchange for to be allowed to stay in Russia, which is exactly what he did. Now, interestingly enough, Bill Harvey, one of the conspirators that my dad told me and Rick wrote out in hand, was the creator of the False Defectors Program in the late 50s. This was a program that that got Marines to learn Russian and to steep themselves in communist propaganda orthodoxy, go to the Soviet Union, renounce American citizenship, and then and act as double agents or as moles to find out. Oswald was part of this. He was recruited by Bill Harvey, and that's why he was able to make the trip to Russia, which was a long, multi-level journey by train, plane, and such. It cost quite a bit of money. And then, of course, when his time was due to come back, he was given all the financial aid of an American citizen to come back and re-enter American life. Something that would be strange if you were a defector and you offered state secrets to the Soviet Union. Wouldn't you come back and be tried for treason? I would think so, but not Lee Harvey Oswald, and not either of the other men that were part of the other assassination teams from Tampa and Chicago. So Oswald was just a poor guy that was working his way up, and he was part of a program he didn't know about. He thought he was really, serving a higher a calling, but they picked him to be in the right place at the wrong place at the right time for their needs, and pinned the blame on Oswald. That's why he was shot so quickly after that. Now, there was a mafia involvement in the assassination, but that was only that the mob got Jack Ruby to assassinate Oswald a day or two after he was arrested to keep him quiet. And then, of course, Jack Ruby, although he was begging for his transfer to Washington, D.C. and away from Texas and Dallas, where he said he could finally tell the truth of what happened, was denied his transfer and was died of cancer very quickly. And at the same time, in New Orleans, the CIA had been running a secret operation with very prominent cancer researchers for the purpose of developing a cancer, quickly induced cancer drug that could be administered to an unsuspecting citizen that would develop very quickly and rampantly in their bodies. And I know a woman, Judith Baker, Judith Baker Berry, who was Oswald's girlfriend during the 4 or 5, 6 month period in New Orleans prior to the assassination, that was part of this secret cancer research project to develop this this system of administering a cancer-inducing agent into someone's body without their knowledge. And I firmly believe, although I don't have any evidence, but Jack Ruby was given that, and then he died very quickly of cancer.
Right. Did your dad ever indicate that the CIA or the mob had killed off other witnesses? You know, there's lots and lots of people that died suspiciously in the years after Kennedy was killed, and there's always been theories that, the CIA or the mob or somebody, killed those people to shut him up. Or did your dad ever hint anything like that, or did he know anything about that? Or?
Well, I never asked him anything specifically about that, and my dad was the kind of guy that he wouldn't offer additional information about a subject unless he was specifically asked about that subject. So I would have had to have known at the time, and at the time I wasn't, and I'm still am not, a JFK conspiracy theorist. I read a few books, certainly the ones that allege my dad was involved, just to find out what they think. But I'm not steeped in JFK theories, and certainly my dad never read one single JFK conspiracy book. And that brings into question what people might ask and have asked. Well, how do you know your dad was telling the truth when he told you these things? Well, if my dad wanted to make up something, he wouldn't have implicated the people that he worked with his entire life. He wouldn't have implicated the CIA. he would not have implicated his Cuban, you know, his Cuban patriots. I mean, he was very close to these, to the Cuban people. He took the Bay of Pigs very, very deeply to heart, and that was one of his reasons for agreeing to be part of a plan to take out President Kennedy. If he was false in his testimony, in his deathbed testimony, he would have implicated Russia, the KGB, or Castro's secret police. Because even Castro at one point was in a speech in Cuba, and he said, you know, that the Americans had better be careful because the conspirators had been sent over to kill Castro. He could do the same to the Americans. So he was well aware of the many attempts that had been made on his life, unsuccessful even to this day. But this ties in the involvement of Richard Nixon, which, if you listen to some of the released Nixon White House transcripts, you'll hear Nixon just ranting and raving about Howard Hunt. You have to keep Howard Hunt quiet. If you open up that scab, a lot of things are going to come out, things that will make the CIA look bad, things that will make me look bad. Got to keep this guy quiet. So he was willing to procure over $1 million in cash to pay my father for his silence. His advisors, Haldeman and Ehrlichman and John Dean and such, were just appalled at Nixon's willingness to be complicit in a blackmail, what they referred to as a blackmail scheme, against Nixon. But they didn't realize the information that my father had that could actually bring down Nixon's presidency immediately. And that's what Nixon was worried about.
In the few minutes we have left, I wanted to talk about your mother's death, too. That's very interesting. Tell us about your mother and what happened to her and how it tied in with the JFK murder, if any, and what do you think happened?
Yeah. Well, we're right at the point now where where Nixon is agreeing to Howard Hunt's blackmail demands against the advice of his counsels, and we just went over the reasons why. The reason being that Nixon was vice president at the time of the Bay of Pigs, but more so than that, Nixon gave the green light to the secret operation in the CIA that called for the assassination of Fidel Castro. Nixon greenlighted the use of mafia agents to procure weapons and to work with CIA agents to assassinate Fidel Castro. Now, Nixon felt that if this were to come out and evidence were to be supplied to the press, that it would bring his downfall, even though the election of Nixon for that second term was totally in the box. I mean, Nixon won by a landslide. But for these reasons, he could have been impeached after that or forced to resign, which he eventually was for other reasons. But my mother became involved in the whole Nixon blackmail scenario because my father was a wanted man, and my mother was the woman that dealt with the White House and with the Cubans. The Cubans meaning the Cubans that had been arrested at the Watergate complex and that were in jail, and they were demanding monies through my mother and then from her to my father and my father to the White House, saying that these men, you know, were working for you and we know that you should be supplying them with money to pay their bills, pay their attorneys, for their children, the schools and things like that. So my father said that this was a fact that had been sort of known by all CIA assets, that if you're caught by the enemy, that your family will be taken care of. Well, at this point, my father was unsure of how much the White House realized their obligations. And so my mother was the go-between, the liaison between the Cubans in jail, my father, and the White House and President Nixon. So she was waging a battle, a war, if you will, with President Nixon to collect money and distribute the money to the Cubans and to various people. And she was killed on a plane flying to Chicago, where she was delivering a large sum of money to pay off a private manufacturer of eavesdropping goods that they had purchased for the Watergate break-in. And she was going to pay him off and then fly back to Miami and deliver money to the Cubans. Well, instead of killing my father, they killed her. And in my second book called Dorothy, I'm directly accusing the CIA and the White House of colluding in the murder of my mother to keep my father quiet. And then the next pressure was that the children weren't safe. And at my father's deathbed, many, many years later, he finally admitted that that the murder of his wife, my mother Dorothy, was in fact a means to pressure him into being quiet. And certainly within a few days after her death, he pled guilty to all counts that they charged him with and never said a word about it since then.
One thing I found interesting about your book on the Kennedy thing was that your dad indicated that the man who actually shot Kennedy and killed him from the grassy knoll was a French assassin, a Sarté or whatever. Is that what he told you? Or?
Yeah, that's what he wrote. He didn't really know the correct spelling or the actual name of this person, but he did know that he was a Corsican underworld figure that was brought in by Bill Harvey. Bill Harvey was sent, as I've already said, was sent to Rome to be CIA station chief there, and in Rome, he had already been working with American mafia figures for the assassination of Castro. And once he was station chief in Rome, he continued his involvement in assassination attempts against Castro, but at the same time also put together a list of assassins from the Corsican drug underworld to be used for the Operation 40, which Bill Harvey was a part of. Operation 40, as I've said, was an off-the-shelf CIA-related group of assassins that were available and able to take out anybody that they were told to do. Bill Harvey was part of that group. My father was part of that group, and they came upon a Corsican underworld assassin, a drug runner and assassin named Lucien Sarté, and he was on the list of people to be used in the assassination against President Kennedy. Now, what's come out in recent times was that, Sarté was actually not the one to be on the grassy knoll at the time, but there was another Corsican assassin that used Sarté's identification. And my friend Tosh Plumley, who was a CIA pilot during all that time, has gone on record as saying that that this other gentleman, he flew out of Dallas that afternoon. And the name of this guy doesn't come to me off the top of my head, but anybody can do research if they look up JFK assassination and Lucien Sarté. There's another gentleman that used another Corsican assassin that was there. So although my father thought his name was Sarté, he was correct in that fact. But what has come out recently was that someone had used Sarté's identification, which these Corsican underworld figures, you know, were known to use different aliases of each other to confuse people, and it did cause confusion for a number of years.
Did your dad ever tell you what happened to the gunman that killed Ken? Did they get killed quickly after it happened, or were they allowed to stay alive, or did he ever say what happened to the shooters?
Well, no, he didn't say. But, you know, in doing my own research, Sarté was gunned down in Mexico City, I believe, in the early 70s. They cornered him in a house or something, and they just fired the bullets in, and he was killed. The gentleman that used Sarté's identification and was the killer on the grassy knoll, don't know what became of him. But my dad didn't know. You know, these meetings I had with my dad were very tense, because there was always someone in the house, either his wife or his two kids, that were always knocking on the door, interrupting, coming in, standing outside the door, listening, because they didn't want this to be happening. They were completely against my dad coming out with the truth about the JFK assassination. They just did not want this to happen. And in the end, you know, and I can agree with my father. You know, this would have caused unbearable load on my second family.
Did your dad have any participation in Bobby Kennedy's death, or was he involved in that in any way? Or
you know, I don't think so. But you know, that's an area that we did not get into. So I tend not to want to speculate on things that I don't know about from firsthand knowledge. And so when people read my book Bond of Secrecy, they have to realize that I'm not. It's not a book primarily about the JFK assassination. What it is about is my relationship with my father and how the information about the Kennedy assassination came to being and the consequences of my father telling me that information. So it's more of a story of a father and son's relationship and, you know, what went on and how the whole thing came about. Not so much about facts and theories about JFK. So it's a different kind of book. I believe it's the only book of its kind written by the son or the child of an operative that was involved in JFK. I don't know of any other books that have come out written by children of assassins.
Right. Do you think, in your own personal opinion, do you think there was a link between the Bobby Kennedy and JFK, the same people killed both of them, or do you have any opinion on that? Or?
My opinion is, and this is just my opinion, yes, I believe there was a link. There's no doubt in my mind that there was a link. I think, I know there's recordings of Bobby Kennedy on the phone that substantiate the fact that he knew that Oswald was not a lone nut shooter. And, of course, Bobby Kennedy, I would assume, would have come out with an investigation, a real investigation, into the murder of his brother that would have potentially uncovered a lot of things which a lot of people would have murdered him to keep quiet. And I think there's a direct link in that. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
I assume your dad hated Bobby Kennedy as much as he hated JFK.
He hated all the Kennedys because he hated JFK most, but he hated little Bobby because Bobby was Attorney General at the time, and he was making the FBI and the Justice Department raid the Cuban camps, the camps in and around New Orleans and such that were training the Cuban exiles for an invasion of Cuba, and my father was just. Was just furious, as were many other CIA people, David Atlee Phillips, you know, because they were trying to negotiate a truce between JFK and Nikita Khrushchev during the October missile crisis. And at the same time, here we are having CIA-sponsored training camps for exiles for an invasion of Cuba. So they kept running raids on these and arresting Cubans and confiscating all their weapons, which they had bought. And so my dad moved the training camps to Nicaragua and to Guatemala, and so we could keep it out of Bobby Kennedy's view. But yeah, he hated Bobby Kennedy. He hated Ted Kennedy. And one of his first duties in the White House under Nixon was to investigate Chappaquiddick, the incident where a car driven by Teddy Kennedy went off a bridge, and Teddy Kennedy swam to safety, but at the same time he had left one of the secretaries, his secretaries in the back seat, passed out, and she drowned and died.
Right.
And
we
Nixon
got
said...
We got about
go
a
ahead.
Minute left. I want to ask you the key question. Did your dad ever indicate, did he think the truth will ever come out on the Kennedy assassination, or do you think the truth's ever going to come out on what really happened? Or?
Well, he knew that by supplying me with certain parts of the truth, and I think initially in the beginning he wanted to get all the truth out, but then he succumbed to pressures from his attorney and from his family. Yes, he did think that eventually the truth was going to come out, and I think eventually the truth will come out. I think the truth is out there mostly right now in the fact that many authors, Roger Stone, the latest author to finger LBJ as the man who killed Kennedy, and that's what my father told me years ago, and so I think it will.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. where can they get your book real quickly?
Bond of Secrecy. You can go to Amazon and purchase it there. If you want an autographed copy, you can send me a check for $20 to Howard St. John Hunt at 3001 Southeast 6th Avenue, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33316, and I will autograph a copy for you and send it back to you.
Okay. Well, that's our show for tonight. Thank you so much, St. John, for being on. This has been an incredible show. we'll be back again next week with another interesting guest, but that's it for tonight. Have a nice weekend, and I'll be back next week. Thanks. Good night.
All right, Jack. Thank you, and thank you, audience.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
You have been listening to The Man from 2064.